Okay, we're going to bring Senate Finance back to order. Time is almost 1:40. It's still April Fool's Day. So we were on Senate Bill 178, Vehicle Rental Tax. We had had the introduction. We'd had committee questions. And now we're going to start the public testimony process. And I think before we get started, let's go to Matt Fonder with the Department of Revenue. I think committee members had some questions for Department of Revenue. Are you online, sir? I'm sorry. For the record, we have the full committee, Senator Kelly, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, who was here on time, and actually early, and Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Senator Fairclough, and myself, Senator Meyer. So, Department of Revenue, are you online, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Okay. So if you could please, for the record, Mr. Fonder, put your name on the record, and then we'll open it up to questions before we get too far into the public testimony process.
Sure. For the record, my name is Matt Fonder, and I am the Director of the Tax Division for the Alaska Department of Revenue.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fonder. And did you have any comments you wanted to make about the bill?
No, Mr. Chairman. I'm just here to answer questions on the fiscal note.
Okay. Very good. Well, I think we have some questions for you. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Matt, regarding this current CS, I was wondering how the tax would be implemented, particularly, say, on the North Slope. You have someone that rents pickup trucks to a company, and they only use that on the North Slope. How would that vehicle be treated in this legislation regarding the tax?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the changes in the most recent CS going to the reducing the exemption period from 90 consecutive days to 28 consecutive days, assuming that all the vehicles that you're referring to on the North Slope are rented for a period of at least 28 days, they would be exempt from the vehicle rental tax.
So if it was rented for 3 weeks, that would be subject to tax?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Fonder, if I could follow up on that. It's my understanding that vehicles on the North Slope don't pay a tax when someone purchases when somebody buys a vehicle up there anyway. They don't have to register the vehicles. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not the expert to answer that question, I guess. That is not something that the Department of Revenue or the Tax Division administers, sir.
Okay. Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, are you talking about the road system that's maintained by the North Slope Borough?
That's correct.
That you are correct, though, but that's not that the North Slope Borough does have roads that are maintained and owned by them, and that's not required, but that doesn't include everything upon the North Slope. Obviously, the Dalton Highway is part of the state system, and there I think you have to pay a tax.
Yes,
you're subject to tax there.
But I think the roads at, say, Pert Oak Park, Alpine, they're all exempt from having registered vehicles.
Yeah. Those are private roads,
yeah,
aren't
private
they?
Roads, yes. Right. Senator Hoffman?
Then that brings up another question, Mr. Chairman. Matt, does this legislation apply to all vehicles that are rented, regardless of whether they're driven on borough roads or state roads?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, as I read the legislation, I believe that it applies to vehicles that are rented for a period. Are you asking if the tax would apply?
If the tax would apply regardless of who maintained those roads or whose roads they were?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I would need to double check, but I think there's still a provision in existing statute that talks about traveling upon a public right-of-way. So I guess if there's a question as to whether or not something ever is on a public right-of-way, then we would have to look into that. But I think generally speaking, yes, as long as they're, if I rent a vehicle here in Anchorage and I drive up the Dalton Highway and go to Dead Horse and I rent it for 3 weeks, I would pay the tax on it regardless of what roads I am driving on.
Then I guess I would like to see if that would be clarified from your interpretation. It seemed you were a little bit hesitant in that. If you could check on that and get back with me, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, Mr. Ponder, yeah, we might even want to check with DMV because I think their practices, if the road is used on the North Slope on private roads, that folks don't have to get them registered and pay the tax. But that should be an easy answer to figure out. Additional questions, Senator Fickle?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bonder, I'm looking at the old fiscal note, and we started with retroactivity, and so Senator Bishop and I have actually been along for the ride on this bill as it came through the Transportation Committee. So could the old fiscal note propose to hire 10 individuals at a cost of $1.2 million, dropping down to $793,000 for two additional years, because of the retroactivity that had been in the original introduced bill. This committee may only have the fiscal note that shows a zero fiscal note now. So can you speak to retroactivity and that's effect on the fiscal note?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Faircloth. The initial fiscal note was addressing legislation that had a retroactivity of approximately 10 years, and the burden was on the department to ensure that any taxes paid during that 10-year period that should not have been paid under the legislation, that the department would need to ensure that the people who rented those vehicles would get the refund. So that was the main reason for those positions and those funds, and now with the current draft that is out there with an immediate effective date, there's obviously no need for that. So that's why we have the minimal indeterminate fiscal note before you.
Go ahead, Senator Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To refine the argument a little bit different or further, individual taxpayers actually paid payments for vehicle rentals in the past. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, yes, that is correct. They pay the tax through the rental company. Like if you were to rent a vehicle from Budget, you pay the tax to Budget, and then Budget takes all of their rentals and puts them together and submits them to us, I believe, on a quarterly basis.
And Mr. Fodder, if I could continue then, so if we were proposing retroactivity again, or this bill to be retroactive, the issue for the state is to having to go out and seek the individual taxpayer versus the entity, as you suggested, Budget or Avis or Hertz, someone like that who was just the flow-through to the state. So we would have to go find individual taxpayers in different states throughout America. Is that true?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, yes, that is true.
The other thing, Mr. Chairman, that was brought up during the the Senate Transportation Committee was the issue of equity. So if we were trying to retroactively return money to individual taxpayers, we have to identify them, but the alternate to that is the collection of taxes by people who haven't already paid it. So I'm sure you'll hear in public testimony in just a few minutes how some folks, some people didn't believe that they were supposed to collect it, and so they didn't collect it, and now that would have to come out of their corporate profits or small business profits, depending on the entities affected. Mr. Fodder, do you have comments on that? We've been trying to unravel this. When Senator Bishop brought this forward, he talked earlier this morning about the tax itself and how we make sure the tax is fair, and that the intent of the legislature to bring revenue to bear on the roads that were actually being used by vehicle rental taxes, how those roads could benefit from this type of taxation versus businesses in Alaska who contribute in other ways.
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I don't have any further comments on what you said. I think you've stated everything very well.
Okay, very good. Additional questions for Department of Revenue at this time? Okay, seeing none, then...
If I may, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I just pulled out the statute to in response to Senator Hoffman's question about the public right-of-way. Current statute does have a definition of passenger vehicle, which is not in the bill before you because it's not being amended. It is in current statute, and it defines a passenger vehicle as a motor vehicle as defined in AS 2890-990 that is driven or moved on a highway or other public right-of-way in the state. So I think that answers Senator Hoffman's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And thank you for that, Mr. Fodder. Okay, we'll continue with the public testimony then. We have John Cook in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Chair Meyer, members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is John Cook. I'm Chief Financial Officer for Airport Equipment Rentals, Inc. We're based out of Fairbanks, Alaska. I'd like to thank you all for allowing me the opportunity to testify today in support of SB 178 and its current CS. Airport Equipment Rentals is a Fairbanks-based family-owned business. We employ 125 people with locations in Dead Horse, Fairbanks, Delta, Anchorage, and Kenai. We are the John Deere construction equipment dealer for Alaska and are also the largest equipment rental company in Alaska, representing a variety of manufacturers. Primarily as a customer service, we offer incidental rentals to our construction equipment customers, primarily to producers and Alaska contractors on the North Slope. We offer these vehicle rentals, and it's a small part of our business, but one that is kind of a necessary for the people that are up there for short-term projects. Most are several months in duration, though some to the producers are often years in duration. I have familiarity with the passenger vehicle rental tax and its entire legislative history, as our company owned the National Alamo Car Rental Concession at the Fairbanks Airport through May of 2013. And prior to my employment at AER, we owned a car dealership which had rental car operations. The original intent of the tax for those who were around at the time was to tax short-term rentals to tourists to help fund road maintenance and tourism marketing. Over the years, a number of exemptions have been granted to that tax to address unintended consequences of that legislation, which were contrary to the intent. This bill goes some ways towards addressing some of those unintended consequences, which are long-term rentals between Alaskan businesses. I think that the 28-day period is kind of a standard monthly billing cycle for equipment leasing companies, and is one that we're all familiar with. I still, though, must state that I do have some concerns with the CS as it's drafted, and frankly, this matter with regard to the North Slope should not even be in front of your committee or in front of any committee. The department, starting back in 2010, with regard to one company, and November 7th of 2013, with regard to a number of other equipment leasing companies, sent notifications out to companies doing business in Prudhoe Bay that they had received information that they were not filing vehicle tax returns. They reminded taxpayers that there was a 10% excise tax on gross fees under 43.52, and those taxpayers were invited to file those returns. Again, I've never received this letter, as you know, we had been paying taxes under our National Alamo franchise and had remitted certain short-term rental receipts from our North Slope operations. one thing that Mr. Fonder had previously testified is that rentals under 28 days on a dead horse would be subject to the tax. He then went on to mention that AS 43.52.099, subsection 2, defines a passenger vehicle as a motor vehicle that is driven on a highway or public right-of-way. I will state that our shop, and I know those of at least one other business, or actually most of our businesses in Prudhoe, are located on a private road system that is not a private, not a public highway or a public right-of-way. The Department of Transportation and Department of Motor Vehicles have both determined that the private road system on the North Slope are not considered public or highways or right-of-ways under state law. The Department of Revenue has been made aware of this situation. This type of activity constitutes the bulk of our company's rentals, and it constitutes the bulk of everyone else's rentals that you're going to hear about today. These are not public roads. The department has no standing and no right to attempt to impose or collect this tax on the North Slope. Most of our rentals this winter are being rented to companies working out in Point Thompson. Regardless of the duration of that rental, that vehicle leaves our yard on Spine Road and travels down Spine Road until it gets on the ice road to go to Point Thompson. There's no part of that transaction, regardless of term, that the department has any right to take part in. So, again, this legislation does not address the central issue that the Department of Revenue has with North Slope equipment leasing companies, which is that they have no standing to be there under these types of rentals. So I would, again, hopefully you'll have a chance to query Mr. Fonder more carefully on this, and again, I apologize for having to take your time up on this. It's very frustrating to our company that the legislature and the governor, I think, are very supportive of Alaskan businesses, but we get to deal with agencies on issues like this that appear very clear cut, and we pointed these issues out to the department, and they have refused to communicate to the rationale for their position to any of us, and so here we sit with this legislation. So I hope we're able to clarify this. Part of it's just like I say, it's frustrating to feel like that this is that you guys all have great intentions, we have great policies to encourage business, and then we have agencies that are out there trying to not follow the law, and that's really the case here. They have absolutely incorrectly interpreted 43.52.099 subsection 2. So I appreciate your concern, and I hope you're able to help hold the department accountable on this point, and I would urge you to pass this bill as it sits and move it out. I'm available to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Questions? I'm sorry, John. Yeah. Thank you, John. Don't see any questions, but appreciate that testimony and that background information. Very helpful. Okay, we do have a Rudy here in Juneau. If Rudy von Imhoff, if you could please come to the table. We'll come back here to Juneau. I'm not sure if we have anybody else online at this time. Rudy, if you would, please put your name on the record and then state your affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Rudy von Imhoff. I am a part owner and currently serve as president of Delta Leasing, which is a smaller equipment leasing firm with primary locations in Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. Appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. We employ approximately 26 Alaskans, and we are not near as big as some of the other companies up there, such as airports operations. But in terms of our lines of business, they're very similar. We have industrial vehicle. We've got industrial equipment, loaders, big heaters, light towers, generators, a wide variety of equipment, and similar to airport equipment. We also have a fleet of vehicles that we offer to contractors and to producers who operate in the greater Prudhoe Bay area, both in the eastern operating area, such as Point Thompson, as well as western operating area, out to Kaparik and even out to Alpine and beyond. So that said, this bill has a, I have a keen interest in it, and our company does. We had some very, initial correspondence with Department of Revenue in 2010 about this, and Department of Revenue sent us a general inquiry via our website contact form, and similar to what John had alluded, that they've now sent back out in late 2013, said we would invite you to file for returns. We sent some correspondence back to the effect that our primary operations are in Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, and we don't feel that we meet the definitions of this tax. And there was a short follow-up. They asked us to provide some additional information, which we did. We sent that off to the Department of Revenue, asked them to let us know if they had any questions. Never heard back. So, and I believe you all should have that information in a packet. I wrote a letter to Commissioner Rodell on December 27th, included that correspondence that we had with the Department of Revenue from 2010. Again, never heard another word back. On November 6th, 2013, our Prudhoe Bay office, as well as our Anchorage office, was the subject of, a coordinated raid, as well, by Department of Revenue, and we had armed policemen for the majority of the day, accompanying the criminal investigation folks in our Prudhoe office, which, as I'm sure you can imagine, was tough to transact business that day with all the armed folks in our office. The results of that raid were that Department of Revenue confiscated approximately 70 cases of files, confiscated our computers, to this day we've not had any ability to get those files back. That was November 6th, so about 5 months ago. I would say that for the record, we have a couple problems with the scenario, given that, as Mr. Cook alluded, there was a very clear letter written to Commissioner Rodell on February 14th by British Petroleum, who, and I don't know if you have a copy of that, and we can certainly get that to you, BP took great pains to explain to Commissioner Rodell that the Department of Motor Vehicles does not consider the greater Prudhoe Bay area to be taxable for registration of their vehicles. They also included a very clear map to Commissioner Rodell that showed the terminus of the Dalton Highway where state maintenance ends, and past the terminus of the Dalton Highway where BP Alaska handles the maintenance of those roads. Our office, as well as most of the other folks who are being currently affected by this, are well past the terminus of the Dalton Highway. Our customers utilize these particular vehicles, which, by the way, are generally heavy-duty work trucks. Ironically, in well in excess of 8,500 GVW, which is currently exempted under the existing statute, but our customers utilize these vehicles past security checkpoints out in the western operating area towards Kaparik, and the security checkpoints are located just past our offices, as well as the other equipment operators who operate out of Dead Horse. You can't get through those security checkpoints without being badged, and even I can tell from experience, just myself trying to get through and get a badge to get through those security checkpoints, it's very tedious and it's time-consuming, and in no way, shape, or form, I don't know how you could consider that being a public right-of-way when somebody who runs and operates a business up there, it takes them weeks to get a badge to get through those security checkpoints. And you can't get through the checkpoints. They're manned 24 hours a day. Both sets of checkpoints either go east or go west. And you're not going to get through them if you don't have a badge. So I wouldn't recommend trying it at any rate. So this matter is of, again, keen interest. We do support the existing bill. I've got some concerns of how the bill changed from the bill that was passed out of Senate Transportation. I want to address that at this time. I will say that operating a small business, this has put an extreme hardship on our company. Again, we have not had access to any of our paper files for the past 5 months, nor do we know when, if ever, we're going to get access to those files. I can tell you that our staff, who was the subject, both in Anchorage and in Prudhoe Bay, who was involved when who was at work that day, was very traumatic for them, all the way from having armed folks in their office in Prudhoe Bay trying to handle customers while this was all going on, while we literally were getting files and computers carted out the door and customers walking through the door. I'm sure you can imagine how that sort of put it, tough to do business in a situation like that. Our staff in Anchorage got to witness even some of the criminal investigation folks after they've secured our computers and our files with full cooperation from our staff. Got to witness the folks from the Department of Revenue high-fiving each other outside of our office in our parking lot, like we couldn't see out the windows. Finally, we've disclosed this situation to our customers, and we've also disclosed this situation to our lenders. And it has hampered us to allow to submit for bids for future work going forward. And it's also hampered our ability to obtain equipment financing, which in our business is extremely critical to maintaining a ongoing concern and an ongoing business. So, for the record, I do know that there were multiple other companies treated in the same manner and fashion that we were. I cannot speak to those other companies and to what they may or may not have done. I can tell you that our company has never felt this tax is applicable to our customers and has never collected this tax, period. I don't know how I can expand on that any further, but I can't speak to what other companies have done. I know there was some intent language that was intended for this bill that I thought was going to be in there. It's unfortunate that it's not in there. It did nothing to tie DOR's hands to go after folks that may have collected this tax and not remitted it or not reimbursed it to the state. It also helped clarify some of the legislature's intent when the statute was originally passed. That's the quick story, and I'm available for questions.
Very good. We appreciate that, Rudy. And then for the record, you said you operated out of Prudhoe. I'm assuming that's Dead Horse?
Correct.
All right. I think Senator Olson and then Senator Hoffman. Senator Olson, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Certainly, the rate of the magnitude that you're talking about is concerning. There's intimidation with armed people that are armed. I was wondering, though, are your security guards armed as well that are at these checkpoints? Or are the security guards that are at the checkpoints armed? I'm actually sure they're yours.
I don't know if the security guards are armed at the checkpoints. I do know they're inside a fairly insulated building, I suspect, behind bulletproof glass, and you have to pull up to that checkpoint with your badge, and you have to have your badge approved electronically, and if your badge is expired or doesn't jive, you get turned around. I do know that. I can't tell you if they're armed or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Intent letter, is that the intent letter you were talking about? Referring to,
Mr. Chairman, I believe this was the draft that I actually was under the understanding at one point this draft was going to be incorporated in the bill. I understand it's current. It's not in its current form. At, at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Faircloth.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Vanoff, now, one I'm off. You stated that you had no ability to get files back.
Correct.
Early in your testimony, and then I followed that up, and then you sort of amended that a bit by saying paper files. So when the computers were removed, did you lose all that information, or was there backups done, or how did that work?
We were allowed to keep our server. Our server was imaged. We were, I don't know the exact number, but I believe it was somewhere between 10 to 12. The majority of our computers, other than, I believe, our front desk computer and our technicians' computers in our maintenance facility, other than some of those types of computers, the remainder of our computers were seized. We have been able to get a hard drive back on, at this point, I believe, two or three of those computers, mainly our most critical one being our North Slope operation. We were able to get that hard drive back just because that stores all of our customers' credit card numbers, and we were able to get that back, I believe, at some point in January.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to find out on the record if when the computers were seized, whether you were allowed to do a backup or not, or whether they were taken out and it disabled the business totally.
It was a very unexpected IT conversion. We were able to, most of our information resides on our server. The information that's on is on specific computers. People's pictures of their kids or whatever that they downloaded on that particular unit or whatever, we have not received that back at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. So I think you indicated that you like the current bill that's before.
We support the current bill with some concerns just of the process, but yes, we do support the current bill.
Okay, I believe the current bill, if I'm reading this correctly, would still charge the tax to private roads on the North Slope.
After listening to Mr. Farmers, I'm surprised at that position, especially based on the February 14th letter written by BP, as well as the maps provided, clearly showing that those roads are not publicly maintained and that those roads are not public access. I don't know how you could consider that a public right of way. That is a surprise to me that they would consider that as prudently would be considered as taxable.
And also, do you, when you lease vehicles or heavy equipment, whatever it is it normally for longer than the 30-day period?
It does vary. It really does. We have vehicles that are out on lease, many of them for excess of 5 years, some even up to seven, and we have some that are on that are out for 5 to 7 days. I would say the vast majority of our business operations are long-term leases in excess of 6 months, and the vast majority of those vehicles, by far the vast majority of those vehicles, are in excess of 8,500 pounds GVWR, which is addressed in the current statute as being exempt. However, when we've tried to get some clarification on that, although the wording is very clear in the current statute as written, we have not been able to get a clear, definitive response to the effect that, and some of our other industry folks have been working on this as well, and they said, well, actually, even though it does say in excess of 8,500 pounds GVWR, the word they're getting from Department of Revenue is that only applies to moving vehicles. And so that's probably neither for here nor for there. But there's some outstanding issues that are still sort of bewildering.
All right. But it sounds like the bulk of your business, though, is longer than the 28.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Additional questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Rudy. All right. Let's see. Cynthia Burns, were no, I don't know who Cynthia is. Did you want to testify or just questions or no? Okay, all right. Randy Johnson with in Ketchikan.
Yes, good afternoon, Chairman Meyer, members of the House, Senate Finance Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 178. Out of courtesy for your time, I'll try to keep my comments brief and avoid repeating earlier testimony. My name is Randy Johnson. I'm a 33-year resident of Ketchikan, and I'm the owner of Tyler Rental Incorporated. Tyler Rental has been in business for 25 years and operates from five locations in southeast Alaska. We currently employ 58 Alaskans. Tyler Rental's core business is focused on rental of tools and equipment to the construction, timber, and mining industries. Although the majority of our rental business consists of construction equipment, we do rent half-ton and larger pickups to support contractors' needs throughout southeast Alaska. A large percentage of our pickup rentals are for remote mining operations, such as the Kensington and Greens Creek mines, which are not on the state highway system. Additionally, the remainder of bulk of our rental truck rentals are for contractors primarily doing construction work on state highways and also in their need to supply inspector pickups for the state inspectors on those roads. We recently became aware of the referenced rental vehicle tax from another Alaska-based equipment rental company. To my knowledge, Tyler Rental has never received notice of this tax since its inception in 2004. As a result, our company has not collected taxes from its customers. This lack of notice also substantiates our support for some form of retroactivity clause or at least a method to prevent the state coming back against us for taxes that we never collected. It's our understanding that most, if not all, rental car companies did receive notice and therefore had opportunity to collect taxes from their customers. We can only surmise that the reason we were not notified was that the state did not initially intend to apply this tax in our circumstance as an equipment rental company, or perhaps didn't fully understand the nature of pickup rentals for construction-related activity. As a result of learning about this tax, we've investigated the legislative history and intent and believe the legislature did not intend to apply this tax to our type of rental activity. Additionally, the majority of our business is providing equipment and pickup rentals to other Alaska businesses and individuals versus the primary intent behind the tax to recoup visitor dollars for the use of state roads. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to testify and go on record that we support Senate Bill 178 in its current form. However, we do have reservations as previous testimony that you've heard that related to the clarification on truck rentals, especially with regard to those on non-public roads, and also our concern over the retroactivity aspect. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else online there? Okay. Is there anyone else here in Juneau who wants to testify on this issue? Okay, seeing and hearing none, then the public testimony is closed. Committee comments, questions, or is there anybody else you want to talk to? Senator Hoffman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I wonder if the sponsor of the legislation was his intent that the tax not apply to vehicles, as was testified earlier by several people that lease up there, that they would not be subject to the tax? And if so, it seems as though the legislation needs to be clarified if that was the intent of the sponsor.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Hoffman, that was the intent, to make it clear that Prudhoe Bay was outside of the rents as it applies to pickups. We've got it's pretty clear in the Prudhoe Bay is private roads, and it's not on state maintained roads, and in my opinion, as with the backup that I got, that it falls out the scope of a public highway.
Mr. Chairman, if the department still feels that their interpretation of the current law is that it's taxed, obviously this issue needs to be clarified to follow through with the intent of the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Senator Olson?
And as you look at other places, I'm assuming that, I shouldn't assume anything. As a sponsor, I guess, Senator Bishop, are you planning on that only vehicles that are rented on state-maintained roads should be taxed?
Getting back to the original intent of the bill, Senator Hoffman, as it was written in 2003, this bill was, the original intent was for passenger vehicles only, capturing the summer tourist season. The intent of the bill was never to go after those rents off of in a Prudhoe Bay area or a remote mine site where those vehicles don't travel a public road.
Yes, that was, Mr. Chairman, if I could continue. That was my question. If you have the places like down in Ketchikan where Mr. Johnson was talking about dealing with private roads that are out on some of these mining districts that have to put in their own roads, your intention is not for them to be taxed either. Is that correct?
That would be correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Senator Hoffman that it has to be clarified so the Department of, to have a state agency go out there and do what they did to Delta Leasing, I find, as a small businessman myself, having armed people come into my business premises is very troubling, and because of that, I think they're overstepping their bounds, Mr. Chairman. So I think it needs to be clarified so the Department of Revenue doesn't go out there and cripple some of these businesses that are trying to make a living. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Other comments? Senator Faircloth?
Mr. Chairman, just in regards to the last person who testified and the ability of the state of Alaska to notify everyone of every law that's on the books. I think I heard it when I was very young that ignorance of the law is not a defense that you could use in court. And so while we make every attempt to notify every taxpayer through public notices or through this public process that we go through, it's impossible for the state of Alaska to make sure that everyone's notified because we have businesses starting up and stopping, and some of the businesses, when they register on their business licenses, don't actually provide enough information that you would even be able to notify them if you wanted to of what they were doing. As an example, so-and-so consulting, you might not know whether their transportation or whatever to even give that consultant the right information about what's changing. So I just would draw your attention that unfortunately not knowing about a law has bitten others, and while we make every attempt, it is not possible to notify everyone of every change personally.
Okay, very good. Senator Faircloth. Senator Bishop, this is your bill. My thought is that my staff needs to work with your staff, and I agree with Senator Faircloth. I don't know there's a whole lot we can do retroactively, but let's try to get it fixed so that going into the future, everybody's knows rules.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bishop. So let's I think I like your intent of under 28 days, because then that truly does, meet the intent of it being a rental, like a rental car, like you said. I think we need to do a little more work. So we'll hold this aside for now and revisit. Senator Faircloth?
Mr. Chairman, I know your staff will make the appropriate inquiries to the Department of Law to try to find language that specifically speaks to the North Slope or north of 68 degrees, as we sometimes like to refer to that, but that doesn't address the issue of Ketchikan or other mines throughout Alaska, so I know that you'll work towards trying to define the language, so as it relates maybe to right of way or to the active use, at least, of highways, because it might make a difference.
Yeah, we'll let our staff work that out. But what I'm thinking is that DMV already pretty much knows what is private and what is public, and when you register your vehicles, which ones you have to pay taxes on which one up. Go ahead, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a combination of DOT and DMV, right? Because DOT manages the rights of ways and DMV manages the traffic on the rights of way. So just let's make sure we don't have a conflict in understanding of how that's interpreted, because there's, and then there's the attorneys that will define that even differently.
I see two good staff members right there, and then I've got one right behind me, so they'll work this out, I think, and bring something back to us. Okay, so with that, I will set this bill aside, and we'll take a brief at ease and take up the next bill. Okay, we'll bring Senate Finance back to order. Next bill before us is House Bill 305. I saw the speaker was here earlier, but his trusty staff, someone nobody knows here, is Tom Wright. And So, Mr. Wright, if you would introduce House Bill 305, junk dealers, metal scrap, or licensing to the committee, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I do anticipate the speaker will be here shortly. My name is Tom Wright, staff to Speaker Chenal. House Bill 305 started out as a pretty simple bill in its origin. Originally introduced to repeal a pre-stated requirement for junk dealers and metal scrappers to obtain a state license. Well, research couldn't identify any licenses which were issued under the statute, and therefore it felt the statute served no public purpose and should be repealed. This was under the Department of Revenue at the time. Although the original intent of the legislation was to eliminate an unneeded law from the books, well, the process led to an identification of an area where Alaska state law was deficient and needed improvement. In other words, Mr. Chairman, the bill kind of got hijacked along the way.
That never happens around here.
The junk dealer statute was discovered during discussions by a working group of contractors, utilities, and scrap metal dealers who were looking for ways to deter metal theft throughout Alaska. And due to the higher value of metals, such as copper, metal theft has been increasing nationwide and in the state. However, Alaska remains the only state without a law specifically targeting metal theft. Thieves often target utilities, construction sites, and other locations with significant volumes of copper. And in some cases, the value of scrap metal that is stolen pales in comparison to the damage that are done by thieves. For utilities, theft can result in life-threatening situations, service outages for many customers, and very costly to repair. and for construction sites, significant costs and project delays can result from thefts. The main goal of metal theft laws is to provide law enforcement with additional tools to track down metal thieves, as well as provide a deterrent to the crime by closing down avenues to sell stolen property. In many cases, whether states have adopted very comprehensive laws, which are costly to implement, as well as burdensome to businesses, this bill takes a different approach, and through the input of a working group, which included utilities, contractors, law enforcement, and scrap metal dealers, the legislation before you implements these tools to the working, that the working group felt would be most effective in a manner which would add as little burden as possible. It adds new recording requirements on the sale of scrap metal, including date, time, location, value of the metal, as well as information about the seller, including the name, address, driver's license number, and vehicle plate number. And it also requires the seller to sign a statement that the metal is not stolen. That's the basic crux of the bill, Mr. Chairman. The sectional that you have before you is pretty, I want to say it's pretty well explains what was adopted in the bill. But again, this started out as a repealer bill, and there was a need to address scrap metal, and we were asked to carry that on behalf of the working group, and we are pleased to bring that before you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and let me just make sure everyone has version R, is that correct, the latest CS from the House Finance?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. Excellent. Questions? No, I think we already, that's the bill before us. Senator Dunleavy. Senator Dunleavy? Go ahead, Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, Mr. Wright, this doesn't prohibit somebody from selling wire or metal to anyone else, does it?
Mr. Chairman, no, it does not.
So I'm just thinking out loud, if folks want to get around this, let's say there is criminal intent, let's say there was wire stolen from a site, they'd probably be unaware of the bill and the law, but if they were, they could just sell it to someone else who then could sell it on to someone else if they so choose, if it's not a scrapper, per se.
Mr. Chairman, that would be correct. There's always ways around just about any law that's passed.
Okay. And this may not be a fair question to you, Mr. Wright, but do we know how many folks are junk dealers or scrappers?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the answer to that. There's probably people online who have a better idea than I.
Okay. Additional questions? So a scrapper junk dealer license, is that the same as just a business license?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
All right. Okay. Very good. No questions, then let's go online here. Thank you, Mr. Wright. So looks like we have in Tacoma with Snitcher Steel, Louise Bray.
Mr. Chairman, I'm on the line.
Okay, Louise, did you want to make a did you want to testify on this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to. For the record, my name is Louise Bray, and I'm employed by Schnitzer Steel. We have a scrap metal recycling facility on King Street in Anchorage, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Now, our industry ranges from very large publicly traded companies like Schnitzer Steel to very small, you know, one- or two-person companies, and since December, we've been involved with the contractors and the utility companies and law enforcement to try and come up with something that will help to combat metal theft. I mean, obviously, there is no silver bullet to completely eradicate theft, but we're hopeful that we have come up with a scheme that is not overly burdensome to the smaller businesses, but still will give some tools to law enforcement to be able to track thieves. And in addition, in response to a question that one of the members asked, you know, will there always be, you know, an illegitimate dealer or a non-compliant dealer out there to sell to? Yeah, you can't get around that completely. But our hope from the industry standpoint is that once this law is implemented and legitimate dealers are keeping these records, that we will be able to highlight, if you will, the illegitimate dealers to law enforcement so that they can hopefully be able to shut down some of those businesses that are choosing to purchase stolen metal. We really didn't have a very long time to develop this legislation. In fact, the scrap dealers just got involved in December. So we only had four companies from Anchorage plus one in Fairbanks that were looking at the legislation. And I don't know either how many scrap companies there are in Alaska. I'm not really sure how one would find that out, perhaps through business licenses. We recognize that this is a first small step in trying to combat metal theft. We as an industry plan to work with the other stakeholders to try and put in place some additional tools for law enforcement by way of voluntary alert systems and educational efforts. And I think this this record keeping system will also help us to identify, you know, where the industry players are, and hopefully we'll be able to get better and better relationships with law enforcement and with the various stakeholders. I'm open to questions. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
All right. Thank you, Louise. I don't see any questions at this time. So let's continue off net here to Phil Steyer with Tugetch Electric.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Phil Steyer. I work for Tugetch Electric Association in Anchorage. I appreciate the sponsor of the bill. I appreciate the committee's attention to it today. Tugetch and other utilities, as has been noted, have been victims of metal theft. Tugetch was hit at a substation on the Kenai Peninsula last summer. Homer Electric Association had a similar break-in at a substation. In Tugetch's case, thieves cut their way through a fence, cut a number of copper ground wires, and left the substation in a dangerous situation. We, you know, estimate that if they sold it on the market, they might have gotten some, you know, few hundreds of dollars for the copper. For Tugetch customers, it cost them $9,200 to repair the damage, and we had to put more than 600 customers in Moose Pass and Cooper Landing out of power for an hour and 20 minutes in order to put things back in order. So it's expensive, it's inconvenient, and has been, as has been noted, we don't have the tools in place in Alaska that some states do, many states, perhaps all other states. And so when we began to work together as a group, and it was a collaborative effort that led to this piece of legislation, we started, frankly, by looking at what other states had done. And there's quite a range of things that other places have done, and we went back and forth, and evaluated the list, and pared it down, and through you know, discussion and compromise and consultation with law enforcement and input from the Alaska Railroad, we came to the bill that's before you today. And in conclusion, Tugetch supports the effort that led to what you have before you, and we support the bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Steyer. Seeing no questions, appreciate you joining us today. Welcome, the Speaker Chenault. If you have any additional comments, we'll have you come up at the end of testimony. Are you okay? Your staff did excellent, by the way.
Yeah, I got slowed down coming back up.
Yeah, I understand. Okay. let's go to John McKinnon, who's off net as well in Anchorage. John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to testify on this. For the record, my name is John McKinnon. I'm the Executive Director of the Associated General Contractors of Alaska, a construction trade association. We became involved in this issue last October when I learned about a couple of very expensive copper wire thefts from a couple of my contractor members' gravel operations, and began looking into what we could do to make a difference in this. We engaged some of the other stakeholders, initially the electrical utilities, Tugetch Electric and a couple of others. And as we worked into this, involved the scrap dealers. We tried to engage the stakeholders this had a positive effect on, and not the thieves in this, because those are the ones we wanted to stop. Our goal in this was to create a a program that would make it more difficult to sell the scrap metal, to hamper the thieves, and not add a bunch of regulations and requirements on the dealers that would be a burden to them. We understand that this law will not eliminate metal theft or force individuals operating outside the law to comply, but this will make it a lot easier for law enforcement to find those that are operating illegal or those that are or stealing the copper, and make it much more difficult for them to stay in business the way they're operating. Anyway, I'd like to thank you for hearing this, and happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. John, I don't see any questions. Thank you very much for your testimony. Senator Fairclough, did you have a question? Okay. All right. Thank you, John. Okay, we're going to go on here now to, let's see if I get it right this time, Al Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Al Barrett. I reside in Fairbanks. I'm not a salvage dealer or an operator of or a junk dealer, but I do keep several treasures in my yard. I'd like to point out, first of all, that there's a portion of this bill that requires that you keep records available for inspection by law enforcement or normal business operations or reasonable times. In 1977, the Woods and Roe versus the State of Alaska deemed those unconstitutional, those inspections. The Supreme Court said inspections during normal business hours with no reason was deemed unconstitutional in Article 1, Section 14. They also went on to say that the court held that the Fourth Amendment did not permit warrantless administrative inspections. And so during these hearings, I'd like to point that out in case that was overlooked by the legal services. And why I was interested in this, and I have no interest in salvage or selling or buying of scrap metals, is a couple years ago they tried this exact same language in my industry, the taxidermy and tanning of wildlife furs and big game animals, to want us to keep a record of every customer that comes in on what they brought in, when they brought it in, who got it, this burdensome paperwork. So at one time, maybe in the future, they could catch somebody that was doing illegal activities. It's not my job as a small business owner to be demanded to collect data in my case, for public safety or wildlife enforcement, so they can make their job easier while it makes my job more difficult keeping and storing paperwork for them. And I think some of these businesses that think that it's is a good idea to have this extra paperwork, there's also a section in this bill that, you know, if you don't have your paperwork filled out properly, there's administrative fines that go along with that. So you've created maybe an avenue to catch criminals that are doing illegal selling or stolen goods of scrap metal, but they're going to now make their own business culpable to you know, fines and penalties, making them in a criminal state. And so I think the last bill I just listened to, the one prior to this, you know, they gave great testimony on how state agencies and federal agencies can overstep their authority and demand things and come into your business and take computers and paperwork and records and hamper small business owners. So, you know, I'd really like you guys to really take a harder look at this and look at what you're trying to do and how you're hampering small business owners with burdensome paperwork. Thank you.
All right, Al. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Al? Okay, seeing none, thank you for joining us today. Anyone else online? Okay. No one else online. Anyone else here in Juneau? Seeing no one, then we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Why don't we have the sponsor come back up to the table in case there's any final committee questions. Also, I'm told the Department of Revenue is online as well if we have questions for them. Okay, questions for the sponsor, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wright, you worked with some of the scrap dealers on putting this together. Did they add input into the bill?
Mr. Chairman, this is primarily the result of that working group that we mentioned.
Okay. And I know I had a couple of guys in Fairbanks that were on that working group were in support of it. I just didn't see their letter in here, but I do know that they were in support of this bill, so thank you.
Okay, very good. Senator Fairclough? Senator Kelly? Who? Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question of the Department of Law? Did you say that somebody was online? Or revenue?
Well, I think revenue fell off, is what I'm told. They're no longer online.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my question was specifically to the last person who testified, warrantless inspections and unreasonable record retention requirements. It was more global. I believe that we regulate pawn shops, or we used to, when we require them to keep records, and so I don't know if this is more hindersome than that. Like Senator Bishop said, I haven't heard a lot of opposition to this bill. I've heard people saying that people, businesses, and the community that would be regulated are actually working together on this. So I don't know if the sponsor has any questions about the reasonableness of this particular bill and the requirement for record retention.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faircloth, through the chair, for the record, Representative Chenault from the Kenai Peninsula. Representative Faircloth, it wasn't our intention to make it any more burdensome than what good business practice you would normally do. If whether you're a pawn dealer or even a metal scrapper, if you look at it in that aspect, a lot of times it's in your best interest to have that type of paperwork in front of you. It's best to have the name of the person that brought whatever it is in to you, to either be pawned or, in this case, to be scrapped, and to know where it came from and to have some way to trace these folks back. Because in a pawn shop, if the enforcement comes in and they find things that are stolen, they normally take those. And you don't get them back if they get them back to the rightful owner. But you've lost the money that you've paid out. And if you don't keep good records, you have no way to go back and try to recoup those costs from whoever sold it to you. So in a way, I understand there may be more paperwork as far as keeping track of someone's license plate. I think that the bill says keep the paperwork for 5 years. I believe that's the statute of limitations. So, while I understand some concerns there, I think it's a better business practice to be able to keep that information and know your customers. We certainly don't want to make anything more burdensome than what it is, but we also know that there's a problem out there with the theft of copper wire and other valuable metals, and we're trying to address those in the most innocuous way that we can and try to keep everyone's costs down.
I hope I answered your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Chenault, the only other question I have is your reason to repeal the actual licensing requirement of the junk dealer and the metal scrapper, specifically if we're going to try to monitor what they collect.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Tom Wright, staff to Speaker Chenault. This was handed over as one of those arcane laws again that predated statehood, and the in the budget research report that you should have in your packet, well, the licensing of junk dealers and metal scrappers involved the payment of fees and revenue inheritance provision through passage of duties from territorial offices to the newly created state offices upon statehood. Revenue hasn't enforced this. It was a duty they were given. It went over went back to the Department of Commerce, or DCCED, under their business license section.
Go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, my point exactly. If we're going to, if we have an increased issue of scrappers actually taking stolen merchandise, why wouldn't we want to license them, and why wouldn't we want the Department of Revenue to actually enforce that so that we can actually go after the records. That just like the question came to us, why, how many metal scrappers are there in Alaska? We don't know because we don't have them register for a business license.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, we do know how many there are. They're all licensed through the Department of Commerce. And so if you want to look at their business license, that's where they're currently licensed through, not the Department of Revenue. And the original intent of this legislation was to get rid of that section that dealt with the Department of Revenue and not just the Department of Commerce.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Well, thank you, Speaker and Mr. Wright. I think we will hold this bill. Not that we would ever hijack a bill, but yeah, we would never do that here. But since it is your bill, along with your cattle branding bill that we have, we thought we'd just add it to the stack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that's the reason I was late, is that happened to me on the way upstairs.
You got hijacked or branded?
Thank you,
okay.
Mr. Chairman.
With that, we'll set the bill aside. Thank you. Let's take a brief at ease. I think we'll go ahead and, Representative Pruitt, start your bill, but we need to stop at 3, so we'll go as far as we can, okay? Well, brief at ease. Okay, Senate Finance is back. We have before us now House Bill 297, Home Energy Rating Systems. And we have the bill sponsor here, Representative Pruitt, and his trusty staff, Dirk Kraft, correct? Okay. So if you could introduce us to the bill and tell us why we should like it. Go ahead, Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Lance Pruitt, I represent District 25 in East Anchorage. Appreciate you guys hearing this bill. This bill is it's a short bill with kind of a long, you know, a little bit more in-depth background on it. 297 recognizes Alaska Housing Finance Corporation as the state's home energy rating system authorizing agency for the purpose of approving any home energy rating systems used in the state. The bill seeks to protect the investment that Alaska has made via HFC in developing our own rating system, which is the AK Warm system. That system and software has been in use since 1996. Of course, that was developed wholly by HFC, specifically designed for Alaska and our unique situations, our kind of unique climates that we have up here. And it's directly tied to some of the HFC programs, such as the home energy rebate and weatherization programs, as well as interest rate reductions for home loans, some of those types of things. We've also spent, of course, over $560 million invested in our successful home energy rebate and weatherization programs. So what we're trying to do here is really just kind of highlight that they are the authorizing agency. This was requested by HFC, and that's the bulk of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Excellent. Questions? Senator Dinley.
Mr. Chair, there is no authorizing agency recognized at this point.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Seems pretty self-explanatory. And we do have one person to testify, so let's go ahead and take that person, but we don't. Okay, we have somebody online for questions. With the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Is there any questions for them? Seeing none, is there anyone here in Juneau who wants to testify? Seeing none. Okay. You got a zero fiscal note. We like that. Okay. And okay. So I think what we're going to do, we're going to hold your bill along with the speakers. It's in good company. So unless, is there any other questions for the sponsor while we have him here? So is there, I'll ask one question just because we've got a few minutes. Is there any federal funds that will be coming to assist this? Go ahead.
Either one of us did. You want to go ahead and answer?
For the record, Dirk Kraft, staff to Representative Lance Pruitt. Part of the reason we introduced this bill is to help protect some of those potential funds we could have access to. Bob Breen's here from AHFC, and he could better explain some of those grants if you'd like.
Okay. That was going to be my question, was how much do you anticipate in federal funds? I'll go ahead and ask Alaska Housing this question then. Is that what you would prefer? Oh, he's here.
Bob up.
I thought you were online. Excellent. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, since you're here, you should at least answer some questions. But if you could, please put your name on the record and your affiliation.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Breen. I'm the Director of Research and Rural Development for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. We do not receive any additional federal U.S. DOE funds as a result of doing this, but by formula, we receive about $300,000 from U.S. Department of Energy. And our anticipation is that if anyone brings a rating system or software to us for analysis, that we will actually use the U.S. Department of Energy funds to do the analytical work on that rating system that would be beneficiary to the state of Alaska. So we plan to cover those expenses with federal dollars.
Okay. So, questions? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you interface with the Cold Climate Research Housing there in Fairbanks as you're developing these regs going forward?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, we would, up to this point, we have basically developed a software rating system, as was mentioned earlier, since 96. We have a lot of experience in it. We've put a lot of effort into it. We've also trained a cadre of some 90 energy raters around the state of Alaska to use this tool. We would work with Cold Climate, absolutely. However, in the current rating system, we already have weather regimes and weather systems built into the computer system. There are about five or six distinct different regions around the state. We've also built in construction techniques that have evolved through the Arctic Construction Branch of the University of Alaska Fairbanks over the years. And we also work with Cold Climate Housing Research with regard to properly sizing ventilation systems to be installed in tighter, more energy-efficient houses. The ventilation is a part of that equation and has to go along with, but long answer to a short question, yes, in fact, we plan on working closely with Cold Climate Housing Research on this project.
Thank you, and that was a great answer, and I'm glad you guys are working together.
Okay, very good. If there's no other questions, then, like I said, we'll hold the bill over. And for tomorrow, I think we closed public testimony, didn't we? Okay. Then we'll close public testimony. Close public testimony. We have reviewed the fiscal notes, and we're going to put your bill in right next to the speakers.
We put them together.
And might put them together. That's exactly right, Senator Bishop. So for tomorrow, be prepared to take up Kabata, which is, House Bill 23. We'll continue discussion on House Bill 23, Kinnick-Arm Bridge, see where the members are on that. And then in the afternoon, and I don't think either one of these are going to take up a whole lot of time, sometime, obviously. We do have a meeting scheduled at 1:30 tomorrow. We hope to have a bill right across the floor dealing with bonding and municipal league, or municipal bonding, and included in that would be the bonding for the power plant. If that's right across, then we'll take that up at 1:30. Otherwise, we'll cancel the 1:30 meeting. And then Thursday morning be prepared then for taking up starting the capital budget, as well as testimony in the afternoon. So with that, we are adjourned till tomorrow morning.